Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. And now, with our hosts, Eric Colson, Don Cleaver, and Ava LaRue.
Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us. Lots to talk about today. We've got some miscalculations in the state habitats fund. It'll be a reduction there. A gentleman found alive at sea after 95 days, and some details on a chairlift that would have been one heck of an e-ticket ride for one unfortunate individual out west. That and a ton more, you're gonna want to hang out. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Good to see you, Ava.
It's good to see you. Where's Don?
Where's Waldo?
Where's Donald?
Where's Don? He's probably gallivanting and doing something. I don't know. I just don't know.
I don't know.
Don't
know. He'll be back eventually.
How about no?
Pretty much.
I love that line. You ever use that line before?
Yeah. How about no?
How about no? Yeah. Sorry. I like that. We got a lot of cool stories today.
Yeah, you said you were excited.
Yeah, I actually am. One story, it's kind of a sad story, but what do you do? It's one of these caught on a chairlift scenario in a windstorm. Not good. Comes to mind. Imagine what happens then.
Thankfully, I have never come close to that.
Yeah, not good. This happens to be at Red Lodge, Montana. Now, there have been, you may have heard, there's been a lot of chairlift accidents recently. There was a gondola that the arm on the gondola broke. Thank goodness they were only like 15 feet from the ground or 10 feet from the ground. And it fell off, right?
Wow.
Yeah. This particular case, as you know, the cable goes up to the top and then it has a big wheel, they call it a bull wheel. And then it circles back down with the chairlifts that are attached, clamped to the chair.
Okay.
And it comes back down. There's a bull wheel at the bottom. Well, as you go through different towers to keep the cable above ground, there are multiple wheels. They're called bogey wheels. Like on a tank, they're little, you know, their wheels are about probably 18 inches around.
Okay.
And the cable rides on that. And it just by the weight of the cable and the chairs, it keeps it on that particular, those wheels. Well, in this particular case, there was a strong wind. Unfortunately, it pushed it off the cable, off of those rollers.
Okay.
Now, okay, that's not a good thing because then the gap between the next tower and the tower before, so the tower above and below, there's no tension now. This chair is now free-falling. With or whatever chairs are free falling. Well, this particular individual, I don't know if it was the only one there, it went down. And the unfortunate part is when there's slack created, there's a weight on the bottom. So it kind of keeps tension on it that's attached to that
sure,
bull wheel.
Yeah.
So it's on a slide track. Well, when it does that, the slack is on it. You'll immediately drop down. The bull wheel takes up that slack
and it's like literally a bow and arrow. So it will tighten that cable back up.
Okay.
And it launched him out of the chair. They just did the investigation on it. Very unfortunate. But yeah, it was not a good thing. It was a triple chair. Only one gentleman was on it. 37-year-old Jeff Zinni. Really, and apparently it was due to erratic winds. Surprisingly, it did not detach from the chair. I don't know if the safety bar was also being used by him. And yeah, it called the yo-yo effect. So it went down and then it got launched back up and he got launched out of the chair. So unfortunately, but that's what happened on that particular chairlift. So
I'm assuming he did not survive.
No, he did not. So very, very unfortunate scenario that you don't like to see by any means. So jumping into a story out in Pacific Ocean, a Peruvian fisherman was found alive after 95 days at sea.
No thanks.
And they talked about how he survived. He spent the last 15 days without eating anything. He was found alive after 95 days adrift. He was dehydrated in critical condition, discovered by Ecuadorian fishing patrol, 680 miles off the coast of Peru, according to the report. He departed Marcona, a town on the Peru's southern coast, December 7th. I didn't want to die. I ate roaches, birds. The last thing I ate was turtles. I thought about my mother every day. Thank God for giving me a second chance. He had packed enough food to spend 2 weeks at sea, but 10 days in, he was thrown off course by stormy weather and ended up adrift in the Pacific. Said the news agency, according to what he drank rainwater, collected on his boat, and he eventually ran out of food sources and spent the last 15 days without eating anything. Daughters never lost faith. They kept telling me, Mom, he'll come back. He'll come back. And yeah, he actually
survived.
He
must have had no communication whatsoever.
None of that. None of that. Isn't that sad?
That is really sad. Have you read the Life of Pi?
No. I have seen the movie, but I didn't read the book. But
oh, the book is
much better, obviously.
Oh, yes.
Books are way better.
Yeah. That's all I can think of.
Having a situation like that, you know that being out in that type of environment, that's bad. The ocean currents can take you far, far away from where you are and can take you into a non-shipping lane and you be adrift.
There's a reason why you're not supposed to be out there.
Well, without being prepared with flares, et cetera, and that would be something that would be very helpful, obviously, to have on that particular boat at that particular time. Hindsight's always 20/20, though.
You got to do what you got to do. But good for him on being resourceful.
Yeah, no question.
Almost 100 days floating out there. No thanks.
No. I can't even imagine.
Thank you.
Not a good thing at all. Well, tell you what, we're going to be right back. We're going to talk a little bit about the new Minnesota DNR setting regs on Mille Lacs, the regulations, and crossing the Canadian border may be a little different this year.
Ooh.
Stay tuned for more when you return. Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out with us. And of course, we'd like to have you guys check us out. Speaking of hanging with us on more than one place, not just listening to the beautiful voice of Ava and just me hanging out here. You can find us on where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And our interactive stuff there. And of course, Facebook, like us, please. Those things are going to be there and you guys want to check them out. Lots of cool stuff there. So, one story I'd hit at the top of the hour. Accounting error.
Yeah, what happened there?
Yeah, accounting error means a 4% decline in available dollars for habitat work in Minnesota. So if you're not financially inclined, I'm going to try to make it easy to understand, but there's complications that have to be wandered through or waded through to get there. Rob Drieslein, one of the friends of our show, did this report, and he happened to be wandering through, if you can wander through, a 102-page budget and economic forecast for the Minnesota management. Now, this is for the state of Minnesota, and Minnesota Management and Budget Office report just came in, and he said page 47 had a cold sentence that only a CPA could love. Included in a non-tax revenue is $32 million upward adjustment to the prior year revenue due to a correction of an accounting error related to distribution of gross receipts tax revenue between general and legacy funds. Now, the legacy fund is set up to be an outdoor-related habitat, etc. fund. So two things jumped out from those words. One is $32 million, a big chunk of change, and legacy, which means, of course, the outdoor environmental projects. Mark Johnson, executive director of the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, that's where those funds are allocated from, the group that administers and distributes the sales tax dollars for the fund, explained the situation. He said last week, along with the February budget forecast, the staff learned that the Department of Revenue's accounting error goes back to the early days of the Legacy Act in 2010. The Legacy was, or that committee was established on 2008. Johnson didn't know complete details of the malfunction, but the after effects break down as follows. Now, here's where it's simplified. Over 2 years, $2 million annually should have been entered in the state general fund. It actually went into different legacy accounts, parks, trails, clean water, arts, natural heritage, and the outdoor heritage fund. The latter interests outdoor news readers most, and it's the share of that $32 million comes out to $10.475 million. The dollars must be paid back to the general fund this biennium. Not pocket change, small percentage of the big almost $170 million the legacy bill contains. And again, that's dedicated tax dollars for the next 2 years. The good news, forecast factors like interest earnings will offset some of it and should mitigate the $10.5 million loss to the Outdoor Heritage Fund and bring it down to $6.4 million. It won't decimate any projects. The statement came from Mark Johnson, but it does mean that some changes are going to happen. No projects will be cut from the current recommendations, and it'll take a small haircut. And in the final wash, we're talking about 4% decline in available dollars for habitat over the next 2 years. And it's not the end of the world, but the accounting error at Department of Revenue, this particular scenario, Rob said that he's not going to start yelling heads must roll, but how did no one notice a couple million going to the wrong accounts for 15 years? Ava?
For real.
And I want to, when you look at this kind of thing going on, it's the same thing that's going on in the general government right now. DOGE is trying to look at what's going on, where is money being spent. This is a prime example, and I'm wondering, because of the timing, in my mind, I'm wondering if somebody didn't say, you know what, maybe we should start looking at some various things that are maybe questionable, or we better get this in line before suddenly something actually comes up and says, well, this is not correct. So I think that piece of the puzzle is part of it. But again, I how you can do that, I don't get it. Do you, Ava?
Yeah, totally.
It's seriously, $10 million.
That's a lot of money.
It's
how does it just, yeah.
It's like it's 5% overall from that budget period, or 4%. But still, 4% of $168 million? I don't know. A lot of this it brings up questions with all the misspending and the messed up stuff. And it doesn't matter what political view you have. It doesn't.
It's
I don't really care.
Wasted money.
It's exactly correct. Yeah. And, you know, anytime this kind of thing happens, you have to kind of question it. Like the
well,
the old
you can't
segment.
Spend money you don't have. So.
Well, it's kind of like the old segment we used to do, things that make you go, hmm?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is exactly the situation we're in here. So, again, I think it's one of those things that we have to keep at the forefront, as they say. I'm just pulling through my stories here. I'm trying to pull up one of my stories that I was going to tell. And I may not be telling it because it's not there. Oh, well. But it was a good story nonetheless. And I will highlight what it was. Would you like me to highlight what it was?
Sure.
The first cougar cubs in more than a century were found just this last week in Michigan.
In the UP?
In the lower. The lower portion of the Michigan.
Okay.
So very surprising, but they did find several cougar cubs, and it has kind of alerted the Michigan Department of Natural Resources or Fish and Game to keep their eyes out and have some questions that are asked on that side of the fence. So I'll bring that story, the full story, next week when we talk about that. So big story, Minnesota DNR. This is where it doesn't matter where you're at in the Midwest. Everybody's heard of Mille Lacs Lake. And the trials and tribulations that have gone on
every
with that
year.
Lake. Every year, same
the
thing.
The political football.
And yes, thank you. Exactly my words, 100%. We've had two people on last year. We had the DNR on. We had a gentleman from Tutts Bait, who is a real strong advocate and part of the council up in that area. Well, here's the latest. The DNR has set the regulations for 2025 open water season on Lake Mille Lacs. Last Thursday, they announced it daily. And if you're, unless you lived under a rock, you may not have seen it, but daily in possession limit of 2 walleye this year during the upcoming season. It starts May 10th, goes through November 30th. They must be 17 inches or greater in length, and only one can be over 20. That's the most sensible, common sense thing as far as size goes. Because I remember before they would say, oh, we're going to go down to 14. And then they'd say, well, you can only keep 14 to 16 inch fish, right? The issue becomes on any fishery, it looks like a pyramid. The most fish you have are at the bottom of the pyramid. And as you go up to the peak, that's your bigger fish, your 24, 25, 26, 28, whatever inch fish. When they target that 14 to 16 inch size of fish, if you go to Mille Lacs and you're going to fish, not one of those is going to escape. Any one of those that's caught, it's not going to be, well, we don't need it. It's going to go into the box.
Mm-hmm. Because that's all you can have.
And what ends up happening, that suddenly that pyramid doesn't become a pyramid anymore. It goes the other way around. It's an upside down pyramid. And then it tips over. And then you have major issues. Well, so I think they've gone about it the right way. And giving those fish a chance to get to that 17-inch length, that's good. The 2 walleye limit comes after the February Mille Lacs Fishery Advisory Committee meeting, where most of the members told the DNR they favored a 3-fish limit at the start of the open water season. Last year's open water season started catch and release only before anglers were allowed to keep 2 walleye starting in mid-August. If you remember our conversation, how that went, that was...
So they're not even doing the catch and release at all?
You don't catch two fish right away. Following years of restrictive regulations, the DNR said the Mille Lacs walleye fishery appears to be in healthy state. Wow.
Oops.
It went from critical mass last year to healthy state. Viewpoint shared by both state and tribal fisheries biologists. The DNR and Ojibwe Treaty.
At least everybody's agreeing.
Well, but how do you go from it's a catastrophe, the world's going to collapse,
Dude,
Chicken Little, the sky
take
is falling.
The win. Don't ask questions.
No,
just take
I Ava, the problem you have is it's the only way. Yeah. Well, the only way you can change and improve is to understand what happened.
Well, yeah.
And why. And to question things is in this particular case is exactly what has to happen. You cannot have these things. This impacts people's lives up there.
Yes.
And not just people that have a resort on the lake. It's tackle. It's bait. It's everything is involved in the tourism business in that area, whether you have a B&B up there, whether you have a hotel, whether you have whatever, it, your property value, same thing. So again, it's just a passionate thing for me on this, and I really feel strongly about it. I think they're moving in the right direction, but it does surprise me that suddenly the biologists all agree and the DNR says this is a, we should do this. The DNR and the Ojibwe Treaty tribes drastically cut harvest more than a decade ago, concerned by the number of factors, including changing ecological conditions and lower survival rates of young walleye. The reduced harvest is the move DNR says has paid off. If you remember correctly, one of the reasons that we said that I don't think it's in its state that it is was because the testing areas that they have been testing are not actually, meaning test nets to check population, were not where the fish had moved to as the condition changed. There's also, as they say, the Mille Lacs isn't a good place, Brad Parsons said. He is the Minnesota DNR section manager. The Ojibwe tribes and the DNR limited harvest, which allowed for an increased number of spawning walleye and a strong 2024 year class that bodes well for the future health of the fishery. And there's also an abundance of forage in the lake due to strong yellow perch and cisco classes, and they're keeping the walleye in healthy condition. Higher availability of forage can reduce the risk of excessive angler catch rates. State licensed anglers share the harvest with the Ojibwe tribe, reserve the right to fish, wildlife, and other resources under the 1837 Treaty Act. That includes the Mille Lacs Band and Fond du Lac Band, established to the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission in 1984, oversees off-reservation resource protection. And that's kind of the thing. It goes into some more in-depth concepts. Conserving the fishery, the annual harvest level is set through discussion and agreement between the state and the treaty tribes. The DNR said this year the agreement considered various factors, the increased adult walleye population, and resulted in a safe harvest limit of 113 pounds for state and 88 for the treaty fishermen. Pleased to announce the anglers increased harvest opportunity this season, Brad Parsons said. Mille Lacs continues to surprise us, making it hard to assume conditions will be the same from year to year. We appreciate coming to an agreement with the tribe that allows some additional flexibility through these changes. It includes the ability, in the event we exceed the state's share of harvest, to allow catch and release walleye angling as long as the state share of the harvest is not exceeded by 15%. So any amount above that would be deducted from the state's harvest next year. Protecting the lake, obviously protecting from invasive species, clean, drain, and dry. We love that as well, and that's part of what we do. Decontamination stations are there, and, you know, one of the things that's of note, when you look at fishing Mille Lacs, it is an amazing fishery. If you haven't been there, get a guide, go out, and you won't be, you will be amazed. You won't believe it. Because it is such an amazing and diverse fishery, whether it's a smallmouth on the lake, whether it's the walleye, whether it's the pike, whatever you want to go for. But if you haven't fished it and you want to get an education on it, there's a lot of people up there. Roach is one of them, one of the friends of the show. He's been a very strong advocate of the lake and really one of the guys that has helped promote and push what we want to do for that lake and try to do some more evaluations on the lake population. Instead of using the netting, just go for some forward-facing sonar. It's an effective tool. Utilize that piece of the puzzle. All right, moving off Mille Lacs. The stories just keep coming. I can't stop them.
You said it was going to be a good week.
We're jammed up. We're jammed up here. Crossing the border this year, as you know, with tariffs and everything else going on, I think that will be somewhat of a moot point. I think this will be settled out in a period of time here. But nonetheless, border seems unimpressed and particles of dirt. In this particular case, guys going across, being in the border area with crawlers with dirt, you can't cross the border with dirt in crawlers. You can't do it. You don't even bother trying to bring them across the border. Whether you're on the water or not, you can't cross the border with night crawlers. It's silly because there's an imaginary line, but just realize if you're near the border. Don't go across it. If you have crawlers in your boat, you will get a ticket. So one of the things that's also part of that is what is going to happen this year at the particular moment. We know questions will be asked, firearms, alcohol, tobacco, and where we're from and our relationship to others in the vehicle, etc. This year's, however, it may be a bit more complicated than just remembering to leave the raw potatoes at home. The ongoing terrorist debate between the two countries appears to be, at this point in time, something to look at. Mostly food and other supplies as well may be subject to tariffs, duties, and attacks. Call it what you will, but it's an additional 25%. Alerts coming from resorters this year are happening now, and they're trying to appeal that decision, but it's going to be one that is going to need to be addressed. Non-resident visitors to Canada hopefully will continue to have an exemption for their personal items and continue for that, but goods such as groceries, etc., and tobacco, that may be part of a tax that you have to pay. Traditionally, it's not been an issue, but many categories of groceries are non-taxable food items. So that's something to keep in mind, and that they're looking at trying to get a waiver for if you're staying at a resort in Canada.
Gotcha. So, interesting.
Yeah.
You might as well just do all your shopping when you're there.
Yeah.
That's
recommendation.
Kind of
to prepare
guests.
Encourage them to consider purchasing groceries in Canada if they can. If they can't, don't do it. All right, Ava, for you and me, we are the Valley Outdoors. Hope everybody has a fantastic week. Enjoy the outdoors and be safe. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.